Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Family of Opportunity, home of Expert Insights Publishing, Insights and Publish Magazine, best-selling books, award-winning magazines, and global communities where people of influence come together with those on the rise to create immediate impact. And I am really thrilled because today I have with me again, in a second part from last week, Linda Dyer. She's coming to us all the way from Australia. The best way to describe Linda is she is a winner. Linda wins in everything she undertakes. Linda has overcome many personal challenges within her own life, including totally defeating the debilitating lupus condition. Inspired by her own achievements, her passion is in the education and empowerment of others. And combined with her extensive experience and qualification, Linda's education and motivational seminars are always highly sought after. Linda's focus has always been on helping people to enhance their own abilities. She has been involved in education and training from a very young age, including the production of numerous videos in the areas of fitness, motivation, health, and personal development. Linda's educational and training materials are used throughout the world. She is an international number one best-selling author and award-winning author and has lectured in Australia, New Zealand, the USA, Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Singapore. Linda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I sit here listening to all those things and I'm going, is that me?
Well, what I'm so excited about today is that you're going to share more about how you used influence and collaboration to really make an impact on major, major communities and institutions of learning. So I'd love for you to just start and tell us the story about how this all occurred.
Well, I guess it actually started when I left school and I missed out on getting an opportunity to go to university by 2 marks, and because they changed the curriculum and I hadn't done the subjects that they wanted. And you know what? I think it's all meant to be. And so I worked for 6 years I worked 4 jobs, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to put myself through uni. So I did. I put myself through the University of Oregon there in Eugene, Oregon. And I came back and decided that as a pioneer, because nobody else had these degrees then, there were just the 3 of us that went over, I had a myriad of jobs I could go to. So I set up a program, first of all, in a university. And then I saw this ad. After 4 years of working at the university and meeting my husband, I then found this ad. And it was to do with a Royal North Shore hospital, setting up a hospital. So in August 1980, I began working at that hospital. It was just like I was just like a kid with a new toy. They didn't know what was coming to them. I was going to be their new recreational officer. The hospital was the largest teaching hospital in Australia, and I was so nervously excited. I couldn't wait to make the changes that I thought would take this large, what I called a sick house, and move it into a community wellness centre. In fairness to the hospital, though, it was their initiative because of a recent study done on health of nurses and people working in the healthcare system. The study actually indicated that the overall health of staff and people working in healthcare was worse than the general public, and that was because of the stressful conditions they tended to work under. So they called in the troops, and that was me. I don't know if you've ever been to a university or a college and they give you an assignment, and the assignment says, you've got a desk, a chair and a pen, and I want you to set up a program for a whole community. And I'm going, what on earth, when on earth would we use something like this? Well, here I was at the hospital, I'm shown a desk, a chair and a pen in an empty office, and I'm told to set up a program for 5,000 people. And I'm going, yikes, where's that assignment? How did I answer it? Well, because of my gut instinct to change institutions so everyone could use them, I was seeing a much bigger picture than only the 5,000 staff. You can imagine I could see the whole community coming in here and using this place as that wellness centre. The hospital administration said, we'll give you 6 months to get it up and running. Well, I took 6 weeks because I was really ready to go. as the department, the deputy head of nursing showed me all around this massive structure, I'm thinking of all the possibilities that that venue that we were looking at could offer. For example, the cafeteria could become an aerobics floor, it could become a dance place, it become somewhere for yoga, we could do meditation there after hours. There were tennis courts and swimming pools that I could use at various times. There were other buildings, there was a massage, a physio centre that we could use for massage. And it went on. All I could see was possibilities. We didn't need any more buildings or venues. I could use what the hospital already had. So on we went with the program. And what I did is I put on a piece of paper ideas that I thought would run really well in this hospital. And I had, I don't know how many bits of paper, but I suppose 50 or 60, and they went right round the cafeteria. And I put them on with blue tack. And then I asked the staff if they were interested in doing any of these activities to please put their name underneath that activity. Well, I had 200 people sign their name to indicate their interest. It was so exciting. I was just beside myself. Some of the ideas that they suggested I really can't repeat on radio because they weren't totally very good. However, some of them, for example, were like pistol shooting. Well, I don't think a hospital's going to run something like that. So I then found out who does that. So then I became what I call the Activities Resource Department. And it was called ACTS for short, A-C-T-S, Arts, Crafts, Theatre and Sport. With my how can I make it attitude, I worked 12 hours a day putting this program together, inviting people in their lunch hours after work, on weekends, because you know a hospital's 24/7, to come to various activities at various times. I found teachers, instructors, I looked at venues, and it was all in place in about 6 weeks. Some of the people you can imagine were had mixed emotions about this program, while other people were just as excited as I was. There was so much to do. I didn't want to run the whole bank account on my own because I knew it was going to be big. So I decided to get the hospital involved in the collection of monies and to be the second signature on any check that went out, etc. And then nothing in my department was going to lose money. You see, in those days, everything was funded by governments. And I noticed that when the government monies ran out, the first thing to go was leisure and recreation. So this department that I was going to set up was going to be totally self-funded. Then we couldn't be accused of taking hospital funds and the department would last forever. There would be no reason for this department to close down. Opening up this institution to the public so it could become a wellness centre was always in the back of my mind. I felt really confident about my organisational ability, but I really wasn't totally confident in the way I write press releases. And so isn't it uncanny that they put my department right next door to the public relations department? And Penny became my next best friend. So she would rewrite the things that I wrote and it would go out to the public and in they came. We now became a wellness centre. People were coming in their droves. You know, I remember one lady, I said to her, oh, I don't know that you need that cane anymore. She said, oh, darling, I don't need the cane for your courses, but it does still get me a seat on the bus. We were attracting lots of controversies, as you may imagine, and we were attracting a lot of great stuff. I remember a priest writing a scathing report about how could the hospital waste money on fun and game programs when people were dying of cancer. So I replied to his article in the newspaper expressing that we were self-funded, no money from the hospital were used, and did he have any idea how many people with cancer were coming to our program to see if they could sort it out themselves, and how many people were coming to prevent cancer. The priest then put an apology in the newspaper and the controversy decreased. The number of people coming into the hospital increased to the point where we actually had 1,000 people a week coming in for programs. The booklet had to go out and the booklet had to advertise all the courses. I only allocated the back and the front pages for advertisements, and those advertisements had to pay for the cost of the booklet. So I had to write this booklet with over with 80 teachers in it and over 120 courses every semester. So I went around and I found companies that would like to advertise, And I noticed that anybody that works on the north side of Sydney, in other words, if you come to Sydney, everything evolves around the bridge. So if you say north of the city, it means north of the Harbour Bridge, or east of the city, it's east of the Harbour Bridge. And what I found is that all the people that advertised in the north, their advertisements went in the whole of Sydney newspapers, but they realised that nobody was coming over the bridge to the north. So I thought, that's perfect for me. So I went and approached some car dealerships, and they thought it was amazing. So this man walks into my office. It was so funny. And he makes me an offer to support financially this whole book that has to go out. I could hear my staff members gasping with excitement while I'm standing there trying to keep a straight face. I kept my cool, and I told him if he wanted those pages at that price, he would have to commit to the four books every semester of that year. And he was absolutely keen to do that. We shook hands, and the advertisement for the activities directory was set and complete. I waited until he was out of earshot, and I burst out this massive scream of excitement because I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I mean, all I went on was that this is the amount of money we required and that book needed to be funded. And he was a car dealership. After setting up the programs for staff and then introducing the community to the programs, my aim was to influence the community to see the hospital as a wellness centre. Little did I know that the way I ran this department would influence all hospitals in the way they restructure their departments in the future. The whole self-funding concept was catching on, and many departments were asked to look at their expenses and their income. I then put my attention to the original reason why I came to the hospital, and to do this, I needed to influence the staff. And to do that, I need to influence the heads of department to get involved. And so I offered what you call an inter-department tournament. So things like tennis, table tennis, could be swimming, basketball, could be games on the oval, things that they could do in their lunch hour where that department there versus that department there. The rosters were drawn up and we had enough people to run this competition. I will never forget a man who worked in the orderlies department. So they basically pushed the beds around the hospital and they had green uniforms. And he came back into my office one night and he said, "But miss, all the people I've got in my team are doctors and they want to play basketball." And I said to him, "Now, can you see how important you are? They may be doctors in the day, but you're the one that they need to help them to become great basketball players, and you can do that." Well, when he left that hospital, his back was upright, his shoulders were back, and he had a totally different posture. What I found that was the uniforms in the hospital indicated the wages they were getting. And so the whiter the uniform, the more they were getting paid. The darker or greener the uniform, the less they were getting paid. What I found with my program, though, was they had to come out of their uniform in order to play the games. So everyone now was at an equal pegging, and that's what I wanted. And so the comments started. We had comments like, "That nursing sister is great at her job, but you should see her in aerobics. She looks really funny with two left feet." We were slowly breaking down the barriers. Conversations and attitudes were changing. The conversations in the cafeteria changed from people complaining about their job or complaining about the doctor or the patient or what was happening, to all of a sudden talking about, you know, what sport they were playing and what results they got, and what trophies the boss was displaying in their window. It was really exciting for me to go to lunch in the cafeteria and hear this excitement from the conversation. Like everything else in my life, I was then looking at the next level, and I thought if I could do this in one hospital, then I could do it in 20 hospitals. So I started to think that I would run an inter-hospital competition. Like, go figure, what was I thinking? And I thought, this is bigger than Ben-Hur. 20 major hospitals around Sydney, or 300 kilometres of Sydney, could come together on the ovals and tennis courts and wherever, and we could run this and get this theme out to all the hospitals. So in the end, I went over to the university, which was close by, and it was running the recreation programs, of course, that I'd been through initially. And they had a lot of students that needed to do what we call fieldwork experience. So I got those students to come over and help me run this program. And it actually was 6 months' work. More hospitals on the day, though, sent their staff without prior notice. Can you imagine that we've spent 6 months on the program? I've got students from a college needing fieldwork experience, and they've got it down to a fine art. We've got programs a length of a wall ready to just put that team with that team, and more hospitals turn up in buses wanting to be involved. All the work we had done went out the window. It was a great problem to have, though, to have more people than you could ever imagine. At the end of the day, it was a massive success, with over 25 hospitals now having their staff involved in sporting and healthy activities and positive conversations. You know, it was like everything we did from then on was the world was our oyster. So I began to look outside the hospital and looked at opportunities where the whole community to come together to see this hospital in a new light. It was one thing for hospitals to see other hospitals in a new light, but for the community to really see this place as a wellness centre, it was really important. So I ran what you call a giant fair or a market day with over stall holders and people all over the oval doing activities, and we had activities from different sporting groups. We had dancing. We had all sorts of government departments involved. We had clubs and sponsors and fire brigades, and the police came. We had the local football club who gave us their venue on the oval, and we even camped out in it overnight because we knew we had to get up really early to set up all the stalls the next day. And then we had a hitch. A pool shop decided to deliver a swimming pool to the oval, to put it on the oval. And before the fire brigade could come and fill it up with water, because I was going to demonstrate this newfound activity called aqua fitness on the oval live. And before the fire brigade could come and fill the pool up, a big wind came up and blew the swimming pool across the oval. It was outrageous. All these people were chasing the swimming pool. I'll never forget it. I laughed at the time, but I thought, what can you do? So we just moved the aqua fitness programs up into the hospital pool. The hospital was absolutely thrilled with this event. We raised over $31,000 for the hospital. We had bands in one corner. We had people selling healthy foods in another. We had goods and crafts and arts, and we had a walk-a-thon over in that corner, and we had so much stuff happening. Everyone came to the party. It was just brilliant. And that was our biggest introduction to the community into the hospital for wellness. In the end, we had over 120 courses now, with over 80 part-time instructors offering a myriad of courses to close on 1,000 people a week. That was the program. It was now time for me to open up the program even more. And this was 6 years in. So I decided on 4 new opportunities. One was natural health, which was really exciting. So imagine being in a hospital and being able to come and do a certificate course in Chinese medicine, foot reflexology, iridology, herbal medicine. I found a lady that had cured herself of MS, muscular sclerosis, and she decided to run these courses, and she was certified to do that. I'd waited 6 years and I decided to introduce them. And then all of a sudden I'm called up by my boss, and I know this is going to happen, but I thought, you know what, I've waited 6 years, I'm going to do this. I'd researched the subjects, and I'd found out that iridology, for example, was discovered by a doctor. It was actually a young boy, and he saw a wounded cow on his farm, and the cow had broken its leg. And he looked in the cow's eye, and he could clearly see in the eye the break of the leg. So he started to study how the eyes represent the body. And so when I went up to speak to the doctors, I said, I'm really confused as to why you're concerned about what I'm doing when the first thing you guys look at is people's eyes. And did you know that a doctor discovered iridology? And then it dawned on me from all their questions, and they were like little kids at the back of the room complaining about what I was doing. And I went, oh, my gosh, I get why I'm here. You're actually threatened by me. In their minds, I was taking away business. Go figure. I was influencing people to be more at cause and responsible for their own health. And so the doctors felt threatened by that, or these particular doctors at the time. Wow. I was actually teaching people to be responsible for them. My department was built on having an understanding and faith in your own abilities rather than a fear that only the doctors could save you. I firmly believe that both hands of medicine should be working together and not separately. I had, in the meantime, contracted lupus, and I was using my own ability to cure myself at this time using this material. And that lady helped me amazingly. She did foot reflexology on me. She taught me how to take minerals. I learned a lot from the lady who was now teaching. The natural health programs remained and became even more popular. The teacher began working with a couple of doctors as well, I noticed, especially around prostate problems, and she was assisting them in using both medicine and natural medicines. The second new thing was a travel program. Well, this became bigger than Ben-Hur. I thought, if people are that stressed in the workplace, then why don't we run a travel program that can take them away from where they work, where they completely relax and have a good time. And rather than just look at things and eat, and then you come back and you know you've got a weight problem, I decided I would take activities people on the trip. So you could actually do aerobics, you could do aqua aerobics, you could walk every morning and meet the bus down the road. And so began our healthy activities program. We started running programs to the World Expo. After running one trip, I thought, well, maybe we'd need to run two. We had enough people for 10. Can you believe it? Then I started running things right down to Melbourne, which is 14 hours away, and we ran one or two trips down there, and we had enough people for 54 trips. This was absolutely amazing. We took them by bus, we took them by plane, we took them for a week, we took them for a weekend. My son and I had seen Phantom of the Opera 4 times. And I remember one time we went to Phantom of the Opera, but little did they know, we walked out of Phantom of the Opera. We went off to see the tennis. This is terrible. We went off to see the tennis because the Australian Open was playing. And we came back just before it finished. We were standing outside the theatre. And none of those people realised we didn't stay to see the show. Because anything they asked us about the show, we'd already seen it 4 times, so we could answer all their questions. It was wonderful. It was such a good time. And I took them when we went to Melbourne. I would do things like take them to Lygon Street or take them down to see the fairy penguins. Or when you've got numbers, you can do so much. So my mind would just race ahead and think about all the things we could do while we were there. We even became so big in travel that we were examined by the Australian travel industry. And they couldn't find anything wrong, because at that time in Australia, anyone could hire a bus and take people away. It's just that we were doing a lot of that. little did we know that we'd set up, or I'd set up, a $500,000 program in travel. My family really benefited, though, because the guy that we really befriended, because he started running a lot of our trips, and we just knew we could trust him. He had his insurances. He was doing a great job. He had the right people on the trip. And so he started to invite my husband, my son, my mum and dad came along on some of the trips. It was just an amazing time. When I pulled my son out of school to go on these trips, imagine taking your kid around Australia. I mean, the flora, the fauna, the crocodiles, the rivers, the flowers, the desert. He learnt so much. And in those times, what I would do is get him to do his own diary. So he had to take his own photos, and he would have to write up a thing on the day of what that day was like for him. And he took it back to the school, and the principal gave him a principal's award for his book. It was just the best learning time for him. He just loved it. Another part of our trip was to go down to the Snowy Mountains. So we started going down in the winter. We ran ski programs. And after I went down 7 times, and I don't even like the cold, I learned to ski really well and take a lot of people. We even took the disabled down. It was so beautiful, and the aged. And then I gave that to my assistant. I said, honey, you're running all the ski programs. And she loved it. You know, she would be on that bus on a Friday afternoon, and we'd go down the Snowy Mountains. I then opened up the program to the older generations, and they came in their droves. This all came from a conversation that my mother had. One day my mum said, you know what, I won't have much longer to live because my mother died at 68, and I will probably die then as well. I could not believe my ears. I was so shocked. I had no concept of anyone dying at such a young age, let alone my mother. So then the rejuvenation camps were set up. We had instructors that should show you the flora, the fauna. They could teach you aqua fitness in the spa. They could dance with you, massage you, teach you how to massage, teach you relaxation techniques. Every instructor that came on my trips had to know how to teach 3 activities. And so on went the rejuvenation camps. Again, after running one trip, I was thinking we needed to plan for two. Guess what? We had enough bookings for six. So we didn't have a day off for 6 weeks. I then employed my husband, who was a chef, to do all the cooking for these people. So then we could at least be together. And then I was doing all the activities. And of course, it was school holidays, so my son could come down and be a part of it. It was just amazing. We initially went with a healthy option in mind. However, we overheard some people asking for things like English marmalade jam or, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could just have fish and chips one night? And so I told my husband, and he just miraculously produced fish and chips with salad for, you know, 44 people that night. It was just amazing. I will never forget the reaction when we brought down a nutritionist and an author into our programs. His name was Ross Horn, and he wrote a book called The Anti-Cancer, Anti-Heart Attack Cookbook. So what we did is we all had lunch, and what Ross would do is he would say to my husband, what I want you to do is I want you to put all the sauces and the additives like butter and that separately on the table and give them a choice of what they put on their fish and salad. So that's what we did. Well, this was really exciting because after lunch, he would get them all to come and sit like theatre style, and he showed them slides. And he showed them slides of their blood cells. And he said, those of you that had the butter and the sauces and you put the stuff all over your fish, this is what your blood cells look like now. And they weren't going anywhere. They were lethargic. They were droopy. It was really interesting. And then he said, those of you that decided not to put the sauces on your fish, this is what your blood cells look like. And they were really chirpy blood cells all separated from each other, and it's like they were dancing. Wow, it was amazing to do that, because it wasn't like we were saying you can't do that. We were saying you always have a choice. Wow, it was that was a wonderful part. I really appreciated that, and that changed a lot of people's perceptions. We also took the elderly down the snow in the summer, and we opened up the snowy mountains in the summer, and we decided to walk people across the top of Mount Kosciuszko, which is the tallest mountain in Australia, which is like a molehill for the rest of the world, but anyway, it's our tallest mountain. And so we overheard a lady in the winter before we started the summer programs. This lady, I could hear her saying, wouldn't it be great if we could get a sleigh and we could go right through and up to Mount Kosciuszko and have a sleigh ride in the snow, you know? And I overheard her, and I went and made some phone calls, and I rang the over snow transport people, and I said, how can you help me take, you know, like about 40 people in over snow transport all up through the snow to the point where, you know, the highest point you could take us, leave us there for a little while and then come back and pick us up? And he negotiated a price, and I said, well, if you halve that price, you've got all of us. I said to them, I came back and I announced at lunch that wouldn't it be great if we got in a sleigh and went up into the snow, and this lady, I could just see her staring at me. I was like, how did you know what I wanted to do? It was a magical, magical moment. They all went and got, they were like little kids. They all went and got their blankets off their beds. They wrapped themselves around with their as much woolen clothing as they could. And they all got on this over snow transport pulled by tractors. And it took them right up to the top of Mount, near the top of Mount Kosciuszko. The snow was about a metre deep, and it was soft and fresh, and these people had started to roll in it. I had to go and get one lady. I thought we were going to lose her. And then we started dancing in the snow, and they were throwing snow at each other. They became kids. They were singing, they were cheering, they were laughing, they were taking photos. It was a wonderland. It was an amazing, amazing time. And so those people went back, and you can imagine how many more trips we ran after that. The following summer, I took a group up of war vets, and we walked them across to the top of Mount Kosciuszko. And that was a very teary time because they'd all lost their husbands in the war. And one of them said, this is the closest to heaven where my husband is, and I am so grateful to be this close to him. Another lady actually said, this is the closest to heaven I'll ever get. And we ended up walking back to find that my husband's father had passed away that day. So it was like I was being prepped for this event. And I played the guitar and sang then as well. So I sang through tears, and we laughed and smiled and cried a lot. And we all supported each other. It was a very moving day and an extremely, very moving night. The third thing I added to the program was for the disabled. This doctor walked into my office, and I'll never forget it. And she goes, I'd like to run some programs for the disabled. And I said, okay, great. So when would you like to start? Next Monday? And she sat there, and she just burst into tears. And she said, you don't know what it's been like. I've been for 2 years asking government departments and organisations to help me, and you just say, when can we start? And I said, oh, have I done something wrong? And I realised they were tears of joy. She was absolutely stoked that somebody could help her. We talked about the program just for the disabled, and we talked about a program where they could assimilate into other programs the minute they felt ready, and we could help them feel ready. So I ended up employing one of the disabled to work with me in the office, and he could be a big instigator of programs for them. And his name was Greg, and it was a great time. So we ran lots of different programs, I can tell you. I can't say it was smooth sailing. It wasn't. However, it was challenging and it was great. We had choirs for them. We had tennis programs. They joined aqua fitness programs. They came into our travel programs. They came up to the Phantom of the Opera, went down to Phantom of the Opera. They went up to Expo. They went on trips around Australia. And my little boy, Nathan, actually grew up with them because they were like his friends. And I remember one day down the Snowy Mountains where we had a whole group of them enjoying a wonderful time down there, and my son came up and he said, aren't I lucky, Mum? I've got so many friends. As far as my son's concerned, these beautiful people were his friends, and all he saw were their abilities. He taught us a lot, and so did they. We learnt from each other. The fourth addition that I had to the program came from my son himself. In the school holidays, many parents were both working and found it very challenging to take the 10 or 12 weeks off a year that they needed, and I'm sure the same thing happens around the world. So he said to me, Mum, instead of sending me to a basketball camp or a tennis camp or a soccer camp, why can't we go to a camp where they do the whole lot? And before I could finish saying the statement, I could hear myself saying, well, I could do that. And then I realised I could. I was trained in sport and recreation, and we had to teach every one of those sports before we could finish our course. So that started a whole new concept. So all of a sudden now in the school holidays, I thought, it's perfect. 5,000 staff coming to a hospital. They bring their kids to the hospital. We look after the kids because we're not running programs in those times anyway for the staff. That's school holiday time. And then the staff could be happy working. We've got their kids. They simply come over, pick their children up, and they chat about their day in the car. I had it all worked out. What I didn't have worked out were the numbers. 120 kids to pick up.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going, yikes, I haven't got enough staff. And so I rang my dad, who's a soccer coach from England, and I said, Dad, help. You've got to come over and help me coach soccer. I've got 77 seven-year-olds in one line here all wanting soccer. Oh, my gosh. And I had six-year-olds. It was really funny. So they could come from between the ages of 5 to 12. And my staff were running like chooks with their heads cut off, or chickens with their heads cut off. It was very, very funny time and a great time. Those kids had a ball. We put them in the swimming pool. They learnt to play tennis. They played soccer on the oval. I'm sure they slept in their dinner that night because we did. With all the success of all the various programs, the Royal North Shore Hospital Activities Department started to receive opportunities for awards. Without my knowledge, one of the teachers nominated me for an Outstanding Young Australian Award. It was such an honour. I was really taken back because as far as I was concerned, I'm just doing my job. I was so touched by this opportunity and remember being called up by this TV personality. And I remembered him from being on TV, but I had no idea how tall he was. And I just kept looking up and looking up and looking up as he gave me my award. Then the university professor from the University of Oregon, who heard about all the work I was doing out in Australia from the work I'd learned at the University of Oregon, he wanted to nominate me for an Agate Award. He said, Linda, it always goes to people who do all this research, but here you are, you've gone past the research, you've actually put all your learnings into action. So I would really like to nominate you for that award. So there were things coming left, right and centre. I was then also awarded a Life Members Award for the Recreation and Leisure Association of the USA. I ran a convention out here in Australia. I was asked to speak at other conventions around the world with this association, And again, it was all run by that professor from the University of Oregon. It was an amazing time for me. And I can't even begin to tell you that I left the invitation when I was asked to lecture with him once in Tromsø, Norway, on the floor thinking, there's no way I could work with professors. You know, I'm not that ability. And it took me 4 days to come to the realization that I could because I had done it practically. The funny part about it was, though, architects started phoning me to see how they could change the way they build hospitals. So then I was starting to feel this was amazing. Then the hospital asked us to do a perceived forecast plan for the year 2000. At first we were thinking, when on earth have we got time to do that? But when the numbers were crunched, we realised we were now running a $1 million department. I had put so much attention and focus on achieving this community wellness centre and changing the roles of the hospital from a sick house to a wellness centre that I didn't really know how well we were doing financially.
Amazing.
We had $500,000 program in travel and $500,000 program in courses and workshops and fairs and market days, theatres and other events. It was just an amazing time of my life. After training people to take over my program so my work could continue, I decided that the next $1 million I will make will be mine. I left the Royal North Shore Hospital 14 years since starting that program. The boss of the area health said in his speech, "Ladies and gentlemen, it is said that every day in our lives we learn something from someone. I've got to say to you that I've learnt more from this woman in the past 14 years than from anyone else in my lifetime. The problem is, I think she's 10 years ahead of her time." And I mean, under my breath, I'm thinking, no, sir, you're 10 years behind. Every department in that hospital has now become self-sufficient. Even the parking department, the security department, every department. So we set a standard for lots of other departments to run by, and I just feel honoured to have had that influence on disabled, on elderly, on institutions, on administrations, on other hospitals everywhere. And it was an amazing time of my life, and thank you for allowing me to share it.
Oh, Linda, that's so wonderful. You know, I have a burning question listening to this, because your creativity is indeed, from most people's perception that you were working with, way, way before your time, you know? And I was just wondering what kind of tips could you give our listeners and readers about how they could garner that kind of influence and that kind of support for ideas that are maybe radically never even thought of, such as you did? What were the most important factors, you think, that made this so successful from the acceptance standpoint, your ability to collaborate, your ability to influence?
Well, I think, you know, it's a great question, and thank you for the opportunity to tell my story, because it wasn't until I really started to put it down on paper and get the chance to voice it that I realized how influential it was. And I think what happens is when you come up with something, so let's say our life's going on and we have something that we think slightly negative in our life, rather than focus on it as a negative, look at it as a learning opportunity. So when I missed out on getting into uni by 2 marks, what did that do for me? It allowed me to think that, number one, I'm going to university. I will just find another way of doing it. And secondly, I will start to change institutions so they will accept people like me that can't wait to get in there. You see, all I could see was that in Australia, only the top 5% of kids get onto university. But I was busting to go to university, and I may not be in the top 5% intellectually. But if I'm busting to go to university, why on earth wouldn't you open up your doors and allow me to come in? So I thought, if you're not prepared to, then I'll show you how you can. And that's basically, that is the attitude I work with, is how can I make it happen? And as you know, I'm writing my next book that I'm writing is How Can I Make It Happen? Because you can. And it's about thinking what you can do, rather than focusing all that energy on, oh, well, my life sucks because, you know, I missed out on getting to uni by 2 marks. Think of the energy that you've devoted to that and the energy you've missed out on looking at what you can do in the future. I mean, I've even missed out on 3 opportunities to get a grant to go to university. And in the end, I decided there was too much time being wasted going for these grants that people said I could get. I'm happy to work, so I went and worked four jobs and put myself through. I never let anything stop me, and I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, that idea that anything is possible and nothing will stop you, it's incredible, really.
Because the universe listens to you, yeah? Because the universe says, okay, I'll now bring you stuff that will help you make it happen.
Mm.
But if all you're focused on is why you can't do something, then why would the universe send you anything? Because you've already talked yourself into not doing it.
Absolutely. Well, Linda, I always, anytime I have time with you, it's just like amazing. And today was no different. I'm so glad you were able to share this amazing experience. And it's just bigger than life to hear you talk about it and the kind of acceptance and the way that you were able to achieve things so quickly. Just incredible amount of influence and collaboration and all of that. And I really, again, want to thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I'd also love it if you could share a website where people could go and connect with you and get more information, because you are so amazing. Everyone really needs to get more information from you.
Oh, look, thank you very much. My website is www.mindpowerglobal.com.au for Australia. That's mindpowerglobal.com.au. And yes, I have some amazing online products, so you can actually have me for 20 minutes with a workbook and have a coach on call. It's called the How-To Series.
Beautiful, Linda. Thank you so much for your generosity of your time and your generosity of all your information, both on this call and on your website. And for anyone out there that would like to learn more about Expert Insights, you can find us at GetEI.com. That's GETEI.com. And Linda, again, thank you so much for being here. And I want to wish everyone that's on the call a wonderful, wonderful week.